We're talking about declining job satisfaction among doctors and what can be done to reverse the trend. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Job fatigue among physicians is worse in Wisconsin than it is nationally, and it can be deadly. Physicians have a higher risk for suicide compared with other professions. It ranks in the top 10, according to a 2013 study in the journal Psychological Medicine. Physicians, what aspects of your occupation are difficult to manage? Have you seen this change over time? And medical students, are you struggling to keep up with the stress of being a physician in training? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Molly Rawley is president of the Wisconsin Medical Society. She is a psychiatrist and medical director at Mendota Mental Health Institute. She was also an associate professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Rawley, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
And we also have Dr. Cassie Ferguson. She is the Kern Institute Director of the Student Pillar at the Medical College of Wisconsin. And this institute develops different training models for med school education. She is a well-being expert who recently launched the medical college's first well-being curriculum. Dr. Ferguson, welcome to you.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, Dr. Rawley, let's start with you. Tell us about this recent Wisconsin Medical Society report and what we gleaned from it.
So the Wisconsin Medical Society has done physician satisfaction surveys for since 2004. So we've done three of them, but this most recent one, we partnered with the American Medical Association. So we altered our questions a bit so that we were similar to them and could more easily compare Wisconsin to other states and how their physician satisfaction is. And we were actually considerably worse. Wisconsin physicians scored high on symptoms of burnout. A number of troubling things came out of the survey. For example, 47% of Wisconsin physicians are thinking of retiring or cutting their hours. We already have a physician shortage, especially in specialties like primary care and psychiatry. And if people are burned out and retiring early, we're going to end up with a really serious physician shortage here in Wisconsin.
Dr. Rawley, how are these results different in any way from what you've seen from past surveys and from years past?
I would say that they're similar, but getting worse. So there's just a trend toward higher levels of burnout, higher levels of job dissatisfaction. More physicians are employed by big companies like big HMOs. There are fewer independent physicians in Wisconsin. I think the number is about 16%. So very few physicians still work for themselves. They tend to work for large corporations. And that corporation, electronic health record, corporate busy work that doctors have to do is really what they're unhappy about.
And we're going to get more into electronic health records in just a moment. But Dr. Ferguson, I want to get your reaction when you saw the results of this report. You've practiced medicine and are a professor at the Medical College of Wisconsin. What was your reaction?
I guess, unfortunately, I wasn't that surprised. This follows trends or mimics trends that are happening nationally. Physician burnout is as high as 50 to 60% nationally as well, and the trends also are in the negative direction. I also chair the Professional Health Committee for the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, and we've been trying to proactively address this issue for several years. By talking to our practicing physicians and trying to understand what's behind these levels of burnout, as well as depression, anxiety, and suicidality.
When you talk with the practicing physicians, what are some things that you hear? What are the threads that rise to the top here?
Well, they tend to fall into three or four categories. Certainly, administrative burdens, which include difficulty completing documentations through our electronic medical record, I hear a lot. We also hear issues related to workflow, frustration of inadequate patient access to appointments, clinic inefficiencies that tend to decrease the time that we have face-to-face with patients. And then, you know, I do hear about emotional health and emotional well-being. So lack of support in the aftermath of medical errors or when we have complications related to our care. I also hear difficulty processing negative reviews. We have a physician ratings service now that and we're rated online publicly, and it can be very difficult for physicians who are really trying to do their very best to process, you know, the very few negative reviews that we receive.
We're talking about physician burnout and what to do about it with Dr. Molly Raleigh. She's president of the Wisconsin Medical Society, and Dr. Cassie Ferguson on the phone. She's a well-being expert at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Gathering your insights, you're part of this discussion at 800-642-1234. Do you think there is something we can do to keep doctors supported and healthy? Or do you think that, like all other occupations, they need to keep up with the demands of the job? You can call in at 800-642-1234, tweet us at WPR Mornings. Dr. Raleigh, this report was compiled from a survey of more than 1,100 Wisconsin doctors. At least half showed signs of burnout, as you mentioned. What are the signs of burnout for physicians that you see that are rising to the top for you?
The signs of burnout are typically emotional exhaustion. I would say that dissatisfaction with the job is indirectly a sign of burnout. Bad feelings about patients, about doing the work. People aren't enthusiastic about doing the work anymore. They just lose any vitality for the job. They become more cynical, and they're just harried and overwhelmed.
Dr. Ferguson, you are a well-being expert, and you launched the Medical College of Wisconsin's first well-being curriculum. Can you tell us about that and what's included in well-being courses and how that might impact job satisfaction?
Sure. I think it's important to note that this curriculum is like it was one part of a multi-pronged approach that we're taking at MCW, and it starts with addressing the organizational and systemic issues that really drive student burnout, which are different than those that drive physician burnout. I think typically shortage of personal time, sort of a lack of time to recover, just to get self-care done, go to the doctor, get a haircut, and lack of control over their time, and also the way that we grade students impacts their mental health. Students in the first 2 years typically or have been in a A through F grading structure, which when you compare those students to other students at other schools that have a pass-fail grading structure, they have a higher odds of burnout, for example, so we're changing that. But the course itself is called REACH, and this is really stems from findings in our own students at MCW that found that about 43% of them felt like they needed mental health services but didn't reach out to get help for various reasons. And, you know, I think that while we deal with the systems issues, we also have to prepare our medical students to deal with the emotional life of a physician and a physician in training in a healthy way.
And I have to pause right there. We're looking at what is causing physician burnout, trying to understand the challenges physicians face. Two physicians stay with us for the conversation. Psychiatrist Molly Raleigh is president of the Wisconsin Medical Society, and Dr. Cassie Ferguson, a well-being expert at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Stay with us. This conversation continues in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're looking at declining job satisfaction in the physician community here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The American Medical Association has studied physician burnout to better understand the challenges that doctors face, including time constraints, technology, regulations. And late last year, the Wisconsin Medical Society warned of physician burnout, saying it was, quote, present and growing. Do you work in medicine? Have you seen signs of burnout firsthand? Perhaps you live in a rural area. Has the lack of access to doctors and treatment had an impact on your practice in your community? We're at 800-642-1234. Two physicians stay with us. Dr. Molly Raleigh is president of the Wisconsin Medical Society, and Dr. Cassie Ferguson is a well-being expert at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Raleigh, one of the physician frustrations that were a part that came through this study was electronic health records requirements. And the Wisconsin Medical Society has studied this over time and the number of hours physicians spent working on electronic health records. Can you break down the frustrations here?
Sure. The electronic health record, although it has a lot of promise for collecting data, there are positives to the electronic health record, but it's a much slower process for the physician. There are approximately 2 hours of time spent on the health record for every 1 hour that a physician is actually face-to-face with a patient. And so that burden has expanded. It gets greater and greater. The business aspect of medicine requires that physicians document various different aspects of care that may or may not have much relevance to the quality of the interaction with the patient. And physicians are spending, some of them, 200 that responded to the survey out of 1,000 said they spent up to 8 hours at home after work working on their electronic health record.
Have the demands of these records grown over time? Because these have been around for a while now.
I think that the demand has always been there as more and more physicians transition to the electronic health record. I think there's more and more problems that are noted. The problems are more widespread. It's not limited to the electronic health record. There are other administrative duties. So, for example, if I'm seeing you as a patient and I want to prescribe a medication, I need to know, like, does your insurance cover it? What's your copay going to be? Do I need to make a phone call to get a prior authorization for that medicine? If I'm going to send you to another specialist, I have all those considerations as well. And then documentation, which is a little hard to describe, but it is cumbersome. And so it just takes longer than you'd think it would.
Let's take a call now. Let's go to Rick joining us from Holden. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
What's on your mind about this?
Well, I really feel bad for the doctors and the nurses. I have a lot of chronic conditions, so I see my doctor regularly. And I have both my wife and one of my children working in the medical field as RNs. And the EPIC program that came out, even though my nephew works for EPIC, it's caused a lot of grief, I guess I would say.
And Rick, do you try to support the family members in your life who are in medicine and working through these issues of stress and frustration?
Well, it's just like with any job, I suppose. My wife and I, we get up extra early every day. We have for our whole married life, forever. And we have coffee for an hour together. We just talk. Mm. And I think that helps my wife more than anything. She works in an ER. You can't about find much more stress than you can in an emergency room.
And I want Dr. Ferguson to respond here to that specifically. Are there some solutions out there that Wisconsin Medical Society and the colleges could support to lessen the demands of electronic health records and the stresses on physicians?
Well, one thing in particular that we've implemented in a part of our emergency department where I work at the Children's Hospital are scribes. Medical scribes come in the room with us as we see a patient so that I can sit directly across from the patient and make eye contact and talk to them while The scribes actually take notes from that visit, record my physical exam, and then help with the paperwork that's involved with discharge. And it's been shown in other studies to, you know, greatly improve the satisfaction that we have with our work, and certainly lessens the clerical burden for me after the patient leaves.
Rick, thanks for the call. We're talking about what to do about declining job satisfaction among physicians with Dr. Cassie Ferguson, a well-being expert and the Medical College of Wisconsin, and Dr. Molly Raleigh, president of the Wisconsin Medical Society. And if you're a physician, have you made changes to your career for the better that bonded you with what brought you to your profession? And if so, what was that breakthrough? What was that turning point? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Raleigh, the report revealed that half of Wisconsin's doctors plan to work fewer hours or leave the profession in the next 5 years. That statistic makes, you know, what you do increasingly important. Will we be able to refill these positions in time? That's a loss of knowledge. It's a loss of leadership, and certainly physicians in a profession that's already crunched in numbers.
We're very concerned about this at the Medical Society. We're trying to boost training opportunities in the state of Wisconsin so that we can train more residents, so that more new people are coming in. But really, if that number of people reduce hours or retire, we are going to be in a greater shortage. And that's probably partly why we're in a shortage now, although we do have some demographic issues where our physicians are aging. Most psychiatrists are over 50 years old in Wisconsin, and psychiatry is a very is an area where there's a terrible shortage of doctors.
And Dr. Raleigh, a survey published in the Harvard Business Review found that lawyers and doctors were among the loneliest types of professionals. What do you think of this?
You know, I think that physicians used to have more opportunities for community. Like Rick mentioned, the caller, when I go to my doctor, I can see, even as a consumer, how things have changed and how my doctor is not necessarily spending much time away from her computer. I love my doctor. She's great. But I can tell what the burdens are. And also as a consumer, I see, for example, all the emails that I get from my insurance company telling me my explanation of benefits, which I can't read all that small print. So the business of medicine has really kind of gotten out of control, and it gets in the way of community. The Wisconsin Medical Society is trying to offer that to physicians, to offer support, and we are an organization that is actually just for physicians. Most other medical-related organizations are attached somehow to the business of medicine, and we are not.
Dr. Ferguson, med school is notoriously rigorous. Not only does it take years to complete, it also requires the long hours of study and practice. Is the precedent that is set during med school contributing to some of the physician burnout later in a doctor's career?
Absolutely, and I think that's why we have to change that precedent. We have to change the culture around what it means to be a physician, what it means to be a student. And I think, you know, the bottom line for us, for medical educators, can't continue to be, you know, just put your head down and keep going. I think our statistics demonstrate that this isn't working for us, and I don't think that it works for students either. You know, I really encourage our students to recognize and allow themselves to feel the intensity of all the emotions that naturally come up when they're in training, and the emotions that will continue to come up when they become physicians. And I think that that helps, that vulnerability helps them connect with one another early on in medical school, and then will continue to help them connect with their co-physicians to create that sense of community that Dr. Raleigh is talking about. But also, you know, when they sit across from a patient in an exam room, their compassion then, if they understand their own emotions and their emotional health is good, their compassion doesn't come from pity anymore. It actually comes from a recognition of what it really means to be human And we talk about that now in medical school at MCW, and we haven't before. So that's a big change.
I want to squeeze one more call in. Mark in Romance, Wisconsin. Mark, very quickly, go ahead.
Yes, I've been working in the mental health field for 24 years, last 21 years in a large hospital, and I can affirm that the rise in compassion fatigue and burnout among the health profession is increasing. There's a number of reasons for it. One is the rising acuity of patients that we see. People are coming in with fewer resources, lack of insurance, and so on. But I'll also say that the Epic system is a disaster.
And Mark, we have to pause right there. Dr. Raleigh, just a few seconds left. Any signs of hope out there?
Well, the Medical Society is definitely working to try to convene the groups of physicians. So if we can pull the physicians away from that EHR at night and actually have them come to meetings, we are trying to work on building a community and addressing these issues.
Well, thank you both for joining us. Dr. Molly Raleigh is a psychiatrist and the president of the Wisconsin Medical Society. She's also medical director at the Mendota Mental Health Institute. And Dr. Cassie Ferguson is the current institute director of the Student Pillar. You're with us on the Ideas Network. We're looking at financial stressors of nursing homes here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're learning that hundreds of skilled nursing facilities in Wisconsin are in crisis due to a shortage of workers and a low Medicaid reimbursement rate. Nearly 1.4 million people are cared for in skilled nursing facilities in the U.S., and when homes are short-staffed and nurses and aides scramble to deliver meals and get bedbound residents to the bathroom and answer calls for pain meds, that has an impact. Do you have a friend or relative who is in a nursing home that closed? What happened and where did they go when it closed? Or maybe they're in a facility where there isn't enough staff to provide adequate care for a loved one. Tell us about what you see at 800-642-1234. John Vandermeer is CEO for the Wisconsin Healthcare Association and the Wisconsin Center for Assisted Living. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So skilled nursing facilities have been closing across the state for reasons we'll get into in just a moment. But first, can you tell us how many we've seen lost in the past few years?
So over the last several years, since the beginning of 2016, about 29 facilities have closed. And I think that what has accelerated the situation this year is that 9 facilities have already announced their closure or have closed. And I think that it's a complicated situation when you're trying to maintain staffing in a building of a significant percentage, so about 70% of your reimbursement is determined by Medicaid rates. So we end up losing about $70 per resident day on every Medicaid resident that we serve. So it's a challenge sort of making ends meet for a facility.
How does Wisconsin's Medicaid reimbursement system stack up across the country?
So our state association is a part of a federated model, and the American Healthcare Association has been conducting a study on Medicaid losses around the country. And unfortunately, while we provide great care, and I'm proud of the care that our facilities provide around the state of Wisconsin, our costs are not reimbursed by our revenue. And we have in the last 5 years, we've had the top five worst Medicaid reimbursement systems in the country, and in the last 10 years, we've been in the top 10 worst. Currently, we're at number 2, which means we have the second highest losses of any states that participate in this study.
And the study came out of the American Healthcare Association?
Correct.
What happens to patients when those facilities close?
So there is a very specifically outlined legal process through which residents are notified and transferred to other facilities. A significant percentage, a lot of our residents, they can't be transferred to their homes, they can't be transferred to communities. They don't have a loved one to take care of them. So they need to be transferred to another facility that's able to provide that great care and service to that individual resident.
And that also means a lot of emotional bonds lost. They have
right.
fellow residents who they have become friends and probably very deeply, who they're, you know, down the hall and in their whole community is perhaps shattered.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that's a very important point, Kate. What we deal with these individual residents is this is their home. When they're transferred out of their home, bonds are lost, bonds are broken, connections with other residents, their connection to their community. You know, when a facility closes, chances are they have the ability to be closer to their families because that facility is located in a community where their family is. So they might have their family members have to travel further in order to visit them. But when the facility actually closes, that resident is transferred to another facility. And while it may be a very good facility, there's something called relocation syndrome. And in that sort of dynamic, a significant amount of residents actually end up going downhill and dying because they've lost their connection to what they know. They've lost their connection to the place that they've been for as long as they have.
We're talking about nursing homes and what's led to the closure of more than two dozen skilled nursing facilities over the past few years in Wisconsin. John Vandermeer is president and CEO for the Wisconsin Healthcare Association and the Wisconsin Center for Assisted Living. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a caregiver? What issues do you see that are in dire need of improving? Have you considered a career in caregiving but changed course when you learned about the pay? And what did you end up doing instead? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. John, a report last year compiled by industry organizations, including your own, showed that there were about 16,500 unfilled caregiver jobs across some 400 nursing homes in Wisconsin. Why is that happening?
So there are a variety of reasons why this is happening, and it's important to note that that report, which several different organizations participated in, talked about not only vacant nursing home positions, but also assisted living facility positions. So this distinction between nursing homes and assisted living is important. Nursing homes are 24/7, 365 care, and assisted living facilities through community-based residential facilities, residential care apartment complexes, and adult family homes provide a different level of care to a variety of populations, including the intellectually and developmentally disabled, as well as frail elder seniors. But I think that really what we're looking at is a connection of two principal issues that are facing long-term care facilities. One is the Medicaid reimbursement. In assisted living facilities, that's family care. That's the state's home and community-based waiver program. A lot of assisted living facilities are facing drastic cuts by family care MCOs, the managed care entities that manage care for the state's assisted living programs. And then in Medicaid fee-for-service, we've been talking about the chronic underfunding of the state's Medicaid program and the reimbursement available to providers. So I think that the connection between Medicaid reimbursement and the workforce is critical. I think that the other thing is we have an aging population between 2010 and 2040. The state's over 85 population will explode 140%. So we're dealing with that. We're dealing with changing demographics from the standpoint of replacing the workers that are currently in positions. So we're trying to develop public-private partnerships with the state. I was proud to be a part of a group with the state of Wisconsin that launched the WIS Caregiver Career Program, which aims to recruit, train, test, and retain 3,000 new CNAs to the profession. And I think that that program has had tremendous success.
But are the CNAs getting paid a living wage?
So I think that what we are dealing with is the facilities cannot pay competitive wages compared to convenience stores, big box retailers and gas stations if they're not in a position to receive the reimbursement on the front end. So 70% of our reimbursement is determined by Medicaid in nursing homes, and nearly 80% of our costs are determined by labor. So if we're not in a position to cover our costs from the Medicaid perspective, we can't be in a position to advance wages. And that's really what we hope to do with some of the proposals that we're advancing to the Wisconsin State Legislature and Governor Evers.
Let's go to Dan now, joining us from Drummond. Hi, Dan.
Hello. Well, and my first, I'd like to say I was a volunteer at nursing homes and assisted living for over 40 years as a musician. And I want to say that one of the biggest problems is that most of these nursing homes prefer to have their workers work part-time because, number one, they don't have to pay insurance, health insurance, or a lot of the other extras that would go along if they were working full-time.
Is there anything to that, John? Is this happening, part-time positions?
I think that a lot of nursing facilities and assisted living facilities would love to have the availability of full-time labor. I think that the availability of frontline caregivers has been extremely limited. So it's limited the ability of facilities to recruit people in these frontline caregiving positions in any time configuration. I would say to Dan, though, thanks for his work as a volunteer in a nursing home, as a musician. I think that is tremendously enriching to the residents' lives in our facilities across the state of Wisconsin. We depend on community volunteers like him.
Are there lots of volunteers in nursing homes?
There are a lot of community volunteers in facilities. There are great activities coordinators in our facilities that depend on local communities to bring forward volunteers to enrich the lives of our residents.
We're talking about what is putting the squeeze on nursing homes and why some are closing in Wisconsin. John Vandermeer is our guide. He is president of the Wisconsin Healthcare Association and the Wisconsin Center for Assisted Living. In the next dozen years, the number of Wisconsin residents age 65 and older is projected to be about 1.5 million. Are you one of them? Have you been looking for a long-term care facility for a loved one? What has that process been like? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email your thoughts to ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back in a minute to continue this conversation on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the forces putting a squeeze on the skilled nursing and assisted living industry here in Wisconsin. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. In Wisconsin, about 90,000 residents live in long-term and residential care facilities, which is a 23% increase in the past 15 years. And we're looking at the costs of providing care and how these facilities are managing their bottom line. Do you live in an area where there aren't enough or any skilled nursing facilities? Did you have to move to be near a parent or a loved one who needed nursing home care? Tell us about that experience. Are you a caregiver here in Wisconsin? What issues do you see here that are in need of improving? We're at 800-642-1234. John Vandermeer is our guide. He is president of the Wisconsin Healthcare Association and the Wisconsin Center for Assisted Living. Let's take another call now. Let's go to Christy, who is joining us from Central Wisconsin. Hi, Christy. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm just calling to just make a comment about being a nursing assistant in a nursing home. I mean, I was a nursing assistant for 25-plus years. It's a very rewarding job, I have to say, that you can have the power to make someone's day better. I'm sorry, I get a little bit emotional. But it's not a job you can do forever. It's so physically and mentally and emotionally demanding, and you don't get treated by management or nurses, RNs, LPNs, like you're a vital part of the team. You are the person there to get a person out of bed, take them to the bathroom, clean them up when they needed to be cleaned up, but you're just not there to be an important part of a person's day. So it's very hard.
Christy, yeah, thank you so much for sharing your story. And I want to give John your ability to reach back out there to Christy and what she's saying.
Yeah. Well, Christy, you're important to me. And the thousands of CNAs across the state of Wisconsin are important to me and important to the profession of long-term care. I think it's just important to note that everything that Christy said about the hard work associated with being a frontline caregiver is absolutely true. Wisconsin's long-term caregivers really need to be valued for the important work that they do every day. Every day of the year, Wisconsin's hardworking men and women provide essential care and services to the thousands of our most vulnerable citizens, the frail elderly and the disabled in our nursing homes and assisted living facilities. The work that they do profoundly impacts the people they serve, and they rely, and those individual residents rely on that life-sustaining care. And so, I mean, I just say again that the work that Christy does and the work that thousands of CNAs across the state of Wisconsin do in our facilities matter immensely. And we need more of them because it is very hard work. And people don't necessarily, as Christy mentioned, don't necessarily stay in the profession for a long period of time as much as we'd love to have our great caregivers stay in the profession as long as they can.
The Wisconsin Healthcare Association and the Wisconsin Center for Assisted Living and Leading Age Wisconsin are all asking state lawmakers to invest $83 million in the next two-year budget. How would you want to see this money spent?
So I think that there are a variety of components to our proposal, and we are working very closely with Leading Age Wisconsin on this. There's a specific way in which facilities that participate in the Medicaid program for nursing facilities end up having to submit very detailed cost reports. And the nursing home payment methodology is probably too complicated to talk about in this segment, but what I would say is there are very detailed costs, cost centers that have to be reported on for a facility to be able to receive reimbursement. One of them is direct care. So direct care includes RNs, LPNs, CNAs, the kind of critical care and service that individual residents really need. We're asking for that care to be reimbursed at the median of overall costs for direct care across all facilities in the state. So there's some connection to the cost that our facilities incur. The support services is another critical area that includes administration and includes dietary, housekeeping, laundry, utilities, different components that are central to keeping the facility operating. We're asking for a fixed increase in terms of our costs of $5 per resident day. We're also asking for an increase of $5 per resident day in direct care other, which includes some medical supply costs, the cost of a medical director, those kinds of issues. So these are very specific and designed proposals that would go toward the costs that a facility sustains as a result of participating in the Medicaid program. One of the other components that I just want to talk about very briefly is the issue of the sort of inadequacies of the Medicaid payment formula. We, for nursing homes, we have had the number of patient days actually go down. We're in a period of time where the people who are turning toward the age of requiring long-term care, they were born in the later years of the Depression and during World War II. And that's a time when there weren't a lot of people having kids. And in 1946, the baby boom took off and a lot of people, you know, had kids. And the demographic table sort of shot off like a rocket ship. Well, that's part of the reason why the occupancy rates have gone down in recent years. And so what we've been dealing with in the Medicaid payment formula is because the number of patient days have gone down, our reimbursement has gone down, and we have been in a situation where there's been money allocated to nursing homes, but it hasn't actually been spent on nursing homes, and that money gets lapsed back into the Medicaid program. So over the last six biennial budgets, more than $300 million has been allocated but not actually spent on the nursing facilities themselves. So we're asking for the money that's appropriated in the state budget for nursing homes because of this workforce crisis and because of our Medicaid reimbursement system to actually be spent on nursing homes.
Do you anticipate more closures in the near future, or is it relatively stable right now for these facilities?
I'm always hopeful that there aren't more closures because this is can be devastating for communities. There can be significant losses of jobs. The residents' lives are affected because of these transfers. You know, jobs are lost. The tax base is affected. I mean, there are a lot of economic multiplier implications for this. But I think that a lot of facilities are very concerned for the future. And in this dynamic where, again, we lose more than $70 per resident day for every Medicaid resident that we serve, it's a tremendous challenge. And I'm hopeful that by us working together with Governor Evers and members of both parties, we can address this critical situation.
And is it critical in both rural and urban areas, very quickly?
Yeah, I think it is. I think that there's a lot of competition for labor in urban areas. And in rural areas, there isn't the population base. So one in five caregiving positions can affect rural and urban areas.
And so you can have the same different stresses, but have the same outcome on that bottom line.
That's exactly right.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, John.
Thanks for having me.
John Vandermeer is president and CEO for the Wisconsin Healthcare Association and the Wisconsin Center for Assisted Living. We've been talking about how Wisconsin nursing homes are facing funding shortfalls and a shortage of workers. You're listening to this conversation on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.